G'day everyone and welcome back to the Survivor Not Oz. I'm your host Nick Idanza and we have another deep dive for you here to wrap up Season 3 of Australian Survivor Champions versus Contenders. And this is someone who I think we all really needed to talk to. We really needed to get their opinion. And I am honoured to have on the podcast Rat Paws himself, Benji. How are you, mate?
Good. Rat Paws is good, brother. How are you going?
I'm good. Thank you so much for coming on. I feel like I have deja vu because I reckon it's like nearly a year to the day that I was like speaking to your sister doing the exact same thing. So welcome. Good to have another Wilson on the podcast. I'm slowly working through your family.
Yeah, excellent. It'll be my dad next season, yeah. I think.
I met your dad at the finale. He's an absolute legend.
Yeah, he is. He's a good guy.
Benji, tell us, how are you feeling? Right now everyone should be settling down to start watching the newest episode of Survivor, but it's all over. It's been about a week or so. How are you feeling now that it's all done?
I feel great. Yeah. I'm very over it at the moment, but excited to launch myself back into it with you one last time.
So this is like your farewell tour.
It is my farewell tour, you know. Did the rounds and this is where I chose to end with a big bang. So here we are.
I'm very, very honored. Very honored.
It does feel good because it also, like, it just finished on TV a couple of weeks ago, but like the actual Survivor event finished 4 months ago now. So it's been a very long time, but a good time.
Well, and what we were talking about just before we started recording is that Benji, like more than others, you've been on this Survivor journey for 2 years almost because of Annalise. That I don't know about any other players, but after I played and my season aired, my family were over it. I was over it. Like you then launched back into it with your application and then going through that process. So you really haven't come out of the bubble in 2 years, in really long time. So, I think you're well within your rights to say you're over it and you wanted to kind of take a break. So I'm very glad that you gave us a chance to kind of chat it all out before you pulled the pin.
Yeah, me too. Should be good.
Awesome. Well, Benji, where are you right now? I think the listeners would love to be jealous to kind of hear what the sound of those waves are in the background.
Yeah, sweet. So I'm on the beach in Hawaii. I'm about 50 meters from the water. And I'm on a family holiday, which has been really cool. Tomorrow's my last day. Been here for 7 days with my Nana. This is a yearly Wilson retreat. And we take my Nana. It's like her special thing. She looks forward to all year. And this is the first time I've come on it. And it's been really enjoyable.
I think that it'd be safe to say that that beach is a little bit nicer than the beach you ended up in Fiji. Yes.
A little bit, you know, when they bring you cold coconuts with a straw in it, it's a little bit better than the rotten coconuts you crack open with the maggots inside that you then have to throw as far as you can away from camp. It's just by a little.
Just a little bit, I'm sure. So, Benji, we want to go through your game because there's a lot to kind of cover, but I want to start from the very beginning because can you just explain your history with the show, like in terms of watching the show or, you know, just give us your background.
Yeah, I think you'll appreciate this because I've always been a huge fan of Survivor ever since, you know, the Richard Hatch first season. I remember laying in my parents' bed, 2001 or something crazy like that, watching the first season, just like having no idea what's going on, having my dad explain to me like why people are leaving and stuff.
Yep.
And from there, we literally watched like every single season. I don't remember how we watched it. My dad probably downloaded it in some immoral form.
See, he's perfect for this game.
Exactly. And we watched every single season in the US and then I heard it was coming out in Australia and I got so excited because I'm a confident guy. I don't know if you see from my gameplay. Very cocky. I'm like, sweet, I'm a player. And tried out first season, tried out second season, and Annalise got on and I was like super pumped for her. And I was just like, cool, I'm just going to be next season. I remember being at the finale and they said, we're announcing season 3. And I was just like, cool, that's my time to shine. And fortunately, I was lucky enough to get on season 3 and just being a super fan, it was just like so surreal the whole time. And I just wanted to go out there, play big and, you know, do the opportunity justice.
Well, I think you definitely did that, man. I think you definitely you satisfied that criteria. It's crazy. I've never heard of someone. I've not heard of someone having applied, failed to get on, and then getting on the season after for Australian Survivor. I feel like that's a pretty unique story. So perseverance pays off, people. There are so many people out there who are like, "Oh, I didn't get on the first two seasons," and they've given up. So Benji, you are the you are the inspiration for it.
Yeah. No, it was cool because the first season I got not that far, but a couple of phases through the application process, and then second season nothing. And I actually thought it was my accent that was throwing it off. I'm like, oh, they don't want someone with a strange accent on because they want to make sure everyone's like Aussie. and then I saw Jericho who in last season. I was like, oh, well, maybe I'm wrong with that. Let's just apply again, and it went well third time.
Well, I hope I didn't take your spot in the first season, but maybe.
You probably did. You probably did, you know.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about this Annalise connection, and before we get to your game, we do have, there's a lot of questions that came in, so this might be a good way to just kind of clear it up for a lot of the listeners. So big questions that came through was people wanted to know, how did it actually help you, not about getting on the show, but how did it help you out there having someone so close to you having gone through this so recently? Or was it a hindrance? It very well could have been a hindrance.
So it's a very unique thing that happened, and it's almost hard to explain in the sense that it was very beneficial in a lot of ways, in the sense that, like, one, motivating me, because like when you're out there and it's not easy, you're like, oh, Annalise has been here, Annalise pushed through this, Annalise has done really well. And it was just super like comforting to know that. And I also kept asking people like, who got voted out to Exile Island like last season? And just hearing people say Annalise's name was like a hilarious joke. It was a hilarious inside joke, but also, like, once again, very like comforting to have these people know Annalise and know this person who's very important and close to me in my life. So in that way, it was very motivating.
That's so funny because it would have been this inside joke with you, and like you could look at the producers maybe and like smile.
Just give them a wink and a couple of thumbs off, and it was like, why does you keep doing that?
It's like watching an episode of The Office. Like,
break the third wall. Yeah. I mean, strategically it also helped, but in the same sense that every season is so different, and if you take, like, I got a lot of advice before I went on there from a lot of people who I do respect and people who've played the game before, but if you take it as like hard advice, like Survivor is such a flexible random game, and if you try and have this concrete structure that's so rigid, it doesn't really apply to your season. And you can go home based on what you go into the game. So it was great as a foundation. Things like even like the waiting side of things, like, you've been out there, you have to wait a long time between actual challenges and tribal councils and stuff, and just being mentally prepared for that.
The logistics of it all.
The logistics was very helpful. And yeah, it was definitely a benefit to have someone so close to me played before.
Were you worried that once the show found out that, or once the penny dropped, that you would get booted off the show or you'd get booted from the process? Or
yeah, fun story. Not sure if I'm allowed to tell the story, but here we go. So I got on about a month before I was flying out, but when I got on, like I got the phone call, congratulations, you're on. I wasn't really excited because I'm like, I'm going to get kicked off because they don't know that this is my sister. I was just waiting for that phone call, and it came a week later, and I picked up. They're like, hey, Benji, do you have anything to tell me? I'm like, ah, so you found out, did you? I was like, I've been waiting for this. And they're like, not happy with me, and they're like, that's track 2 or 3. We really want you on, so you stay on. And I was just like so appreciative when I heard that, because I'm like, okay, that's when I first, like, that was like them inviting me on. Is like,
yeah, okay.
But it's perfect too, because I mean, I did put it in my original application, just not in the interviews or in the group stuff, which is what they said. They're like, we did check back and see that you put it in there, and we looked over it, so you weren't technically hiding it that much.
You wrote that she was your sister.
In the application, it says name your family members, and I had her name in there, full name in there. And that's as far as I went with it.
That's great.
It played almost perfect because I'm like, If they know I had a family member, there's a lot of like Benji characters that they could easily sub in for me.
Sure.
And I was like, if I have a sister out there, they're just like, cool, we'll just put the person who doesn't have a sister. But yeah. Once they said, we want you out there, and then they found out, it's much more friction to replace me. So it worked.
Yeah, like, I think that actually at that point, once you had gotten so far, I think it was actually maybe a benefit in the fact that it showed your capacity to lie. And I think that they would have been impressed by that in some sick way. I think they would have actually enjoyed it.
I agree with that. And they gave me the strict warning. It's like, don't you play Survivor with us.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry. Please let me play.
Did you ever come close? The last question about the Annalise connection. Did you ever come close to actually slipping up out there and letting it be known that, well, not only was Annalise your sister, but she had played Survivor, and that maybe you knew some of the other players from season two?
No.
Never?
No, never. Wow. I was pretty good. I was on my best behavior.
Very good.
And, it's not beneficial at all. Other things that to let slip at times are beneficial, but this one's like, this doesn't serve you in any way at all. So even like Robbie, who I told everything to minus the idol, is like, it's like, yeah, that doesn't benefit me at all. So
it would have been hard. And like, Annalise is great, but like, imagine if someone had said something bad about Annalise, you would have had to like totally try to defend
how
it.
Dare you? I mean, which one? Tessa? No.
All right. Well, okay. Well, that's fair. A lot of fans wanted to know all that, so that's good. Let's dive into the actual season. So you get out there, and Benji, I got to say, you were so electric in the first five episodes. What happened?
Yeah.
What happened? It's like, it was the weirdest start. We had a lot of questions about this, that, you know, you weren't in the show for five or six episodes, and then you end up with like the most number of confessionals. You are all over every episode. You're running strategy. It was fantastic to watch. But if you had told me that that was going to happen at the end of episode five, I wouldn't have believed you.
Benji who? Which one?
What happened?
I don't know, man.
So you felt like you weren't part of the story at that point, and it wasn't until later on that you were going to come in? Because a lot of people suspected that it was the show's way of punishing you for the Annalise thing.
Oh, interesting. So yeah, when I got back and started watching the show, I was like really appreciative of any screen time, because it's unhealthy to be like, okay, yeah, I want my story told, because there's 24 stories out there and they always favor the victors, you know? Like Shane's story gets told really well, but Monica had a big story out there that didn't get seen at all. And I was like, I'm prepared to not even be seen, because I didn't play Survivor for the TV side of it. I played for the experience. And so the first six episodes, I'm like, hey, this is cool. Like, I thought I was getting shown a lot, even though I didn't get it confessionals. Every time I came on, I'm like, yeah, there I am.
There's me dabbing down the water slide.
There I am. They made a gif out of it. So I was pumped with the first six apps. I'm like, yeah, cool. I know I had a couple of big moves. I know I got Heath and Tegan and Matty Rogers. I'm like, Robbie's a good looking dude, and they may just give those moves to him. But even in that sense, it's like, I didn't care. I didn't care what happened. And when I went out there, I laid low in the sense of strategy for the first couple of weeks, because, you know, first impressions are everything.
Play Survivor, Australian Survivor, yeah.
You look, you got voted out, Russell Hance, Matt Dyson, and even Stevie, who was crawling around looking for idols. Like, yes, just to lay low, otherwise you're going to go home. But I didn't, I mean, I also talked a very big game in confessionals at that point, but I didn't do anything. Like, I wasn't making it, like, if they showed any of my confessionals, they're like, what's this guy talking about? He hasn't done anything, but he's like talking a big game.
I'm running the game. And
I'm looking at it like, Benji, what have you done? So it sort of makes sense that they didn't. And there's so many characters with 24 people. Like, the best to last, you know?
So you mentioned like your confessionals. You basically spoke a lot of smack, but like in a good TV way. You had the Godfather thing, the king and queens of the contenders. You taught him the Mighty Ducks, the painting a masterpiece. Benji, can you come to my English class and teach my students how to use a metaphor?
No.
You are the metaphor king out there.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of metaphors. I don't know, I'm a visual person. I learn in metaphors and I speak in metaphors. So they're a handy tool, and apparently they're good for TV too.
Oh, mate, they really sucked them dry, didn't they? Like,
it did. I loved it when they
used dead horse.
Come up with a new one, and you hear it like 12 times an episode. I'm like, God, I hate myself right now.
Oh, that's great. So you mentioned before Tegan. So let's get to this kind of pretty big. This was your first big storyline, and this was the whole Tegan thing. You decide that you're going to get out Tegan. She's the queen, he's the king. What was it about Tegan that made you want to do that? And why did you come up with that line?
Yeah. So I'm going to go back a couple of votes because, yeah, so the motivation behind it. So we had a tight three, tight four, me, Zach, Stevie, and Robbie. And Tegan and Heath and Jenna pulled a great move and got rid of Stevie, who was really, you know, becoming like a clutch player for us boys, going to give us the numbers, because it wasn't too much of a girl boy dynamic, but you know, we had a tight four, and four out of 11 is pretty strong. So when they got rid of Stevie, it sort of like shocked me a little bit. I'm like, oh God, it's like a slap to the face. Like, wake up, bro, you're on Survivor. This stuff's going to happen. And I was really fortunate to have that happen to me, because it's like, okay, cool. Now I want to start playing. And then fast forward a little bit to the Jenna vote. I'm like, cool, I'm out here to have fun. Like, that's the number one reason I'm out there, is to enjoy myself and make big moves, you know, take advantage of this insane opportunity. So I'm like, cool, time to make big moves. And what happened with the Jenna vote? Everyone's like, cool, we're voting Jenna because obviously she's injured. And I thought Heath once again was going to pull a fast one and get rid of Zach. And I was super worried about that. And I'd like sort of getting like a little bit paranoid about like losing Zach, and then I'm just left with, this is me and Robbie, and we're probably next to go after that. And so like with that Jenna vote, I really had to just like hope that it wasn't going to go that way. But I remember sitting in tribal council being like, cool, this is your time to make like your first play. And I was going to write Zach's name down and just be confused. So it was going to go all votes Jenna except for one on Zach. And then I could like sort of pit Tegan and Zach up against each other.
Right.
And I remember sitting in tribal council and I like doubted myself, and I was like, oh, what if this is not the vote and it's a split vote and Zach goes home because of your vote or something like that. And I started having these terrible, like disempowering thoughts in my head. So I wrote down Jenna's name and I went back to camp that night and just had so much regret, because it's like, I came out here to play, I came out here to have fun, and here I am just following everyone else, following the rules, and that's like not me. So after that, I was just so motivated to do something, you know, make a big move and get some respect back for myself, because I really wimped out. And just the rest of the game was just like, okay, what other cool big thing can I do? And I, like I keep saying, like, I wasn't out there to win. I was out there just to have fun and play big. So I'm like, cool, first big thing I need to do is get rid of the power couple, Heath and Tegan. And I mean, we were losing the challenges, and Heath's a big dude, so I'm like, cool, let's just start with Tegan. And we went after Tegan, and there happened to be a twist at that point in time, which made my Survivor experience that much more exciting.
Look, you know Australian Survivor, they love to save people and save a twist. Your sister, myself, you know, like it's unfortunately it was the person that you lied to get out. But it was absolutely like fantastic to watch her then come back. So when she comes when she comes back, there was that scene where her and Heath are lying in the shelter, and you looked really worried. and I said that one of the things about your game is it seems that you are really good at lying, but when people confront you, you look a little bit scared. Were you actually scared in that moment, or were you kind of like, it's okay, I can fix this?
Nah, I wasn't scared. We had that talk with Heath and Tegan, probably, and everyone was there, probably went for 3 hours.
Yeah, right.
And it was 20 seconds on the show. But you know, like, I think the underlying key, and I'm sure you understand this too, to Survivor, it doesn't matter really like the lies you tell or like the big moves you make. It's like, it's just a social game. Like, yes, you just need the right pieces in the right place, and it doesn't matter what other people think of you. And I was like, cool, I know I can pin most of this back on Zach.
which seemed to work well. And I'm like, cool, it doesn't really matter. I'm just going to basically pin this on big old poor Zachy. And the other thing is, like, cool, we have Shawnee and Fenella. We have me, Robbie, Zach. That's five. And I'm not sure, was there nine at that point?
Maybe.
We got Paige, Tegan, Heath.
Eight.
So, eight. So it's like, we got the numbers. Like, it doesn't matter what Heath and Tegan end up thinking. And the whole point of that conversation was trying to just duck it, you know? It happened well. Like, you know, I didn't have the target on me after those conversations. The next vote was Heath, and it was Paige, and then Robbie's name came up before me. So it's like, I would never actually felt the full heat that I should have. But it definitely was much more exciting having her coming back from tribal, knowing mostly what was going on.
So you mentioned Zach. You know, obviously he is a bit of a lightning rod for controversy, his opinions and things like that. Did you ever feel like, man, I'm going to be seen as guilty by association? Not by the audience, it doesn't matter about that, but like by the other players, because he seemed like he was so hated by the girls. Did you ever feel like, this is bad for me, and is that why you cut him in the end? Or what was your relationship like with Zach in those last few days?
My relationship with Zach, we were really tied out there. He was tied to Stevie. I was not concerned with people thinking about my relationship with Zach would, like, I don't know, pull me under with him, in the sense that, I don't know, I guess I was very self-aware about it and kept bringing it up. Like, I was just like, I just don't want to be associated with everything that Zach says to these people who are also close to me, like Shawnee and Fenella. And obviously they're like, yeah, don't worry, he's not. And also, like, in the same way that Zach is incredible meat shield, like big, burly, polarizing guy who, like, rubs people the wrong way just by opening his mouth, it's like, hey, Shawnee and Fenella, if we take Zach to merge, we're going to go so much further. So sort of like aligning incentives in the way that I have him align with Zach with the others. And only when sort of like that twist and Tegan comes back and Paige is not having any of my lies anymore, and Shawnee and Fenella realize that they're now in the most powerful position in the game, that is sort of when, like, okay, I sort of have to let go of this big, handsome Polish guy who nobody's really getting along well with out here. I think
that's interesting what you say about kind of like, you know, aligning incentives and stuff. I think that's definitely what you want to try and do and try and sell it. But like you said, you definitely have to cut bait every once in a while. And you try, and you eventually do have to kind of cut bait on Paige here as well. Could you just tell me a little bit about your relationship with Paige? And because it just seemed so up and down. It seemed like she was with you guys, but she wasn't with the other guys, and she wasn't with you either, and she was just kind of in between. What was, from your perspective, about your relationship with Paige?
Yeah, Paige and I's relationship is very interesting. Started off really good, really well. My thoughts from the early days with Paige is she was very much a social butterfly.
Mm-hmm.
Floating between Heath and Tegan, floating over to Shawnee and Fenella, floating over to me and Robbie. Like, she talked to everybody, you know? And rumors got around from things that we were planning, like overthrowing the king, Heath, to back to the girls and back to Heath. And we're like, where is the leak? And we assumed that it was Paige, when it turns out it was Jenna. Right. And we thought Paige can't be trusted at all. And there's a couple other small examples, just info just leaking. We're like, God, I'm telling Robbie and Paige, like, how? I know Robbie's not going telling people. They're like, I'm sure it's Paige. Info keep getting leaked. So that's what made us really second guess Paige. And we wrote her name down because we trusted Stevie a lot more than her at that point in time. And then the amazing blindside by Heath and Tegan had me and Robbie in a sticky situation because we write down Paige's name, who did not see that coming. Like, we were pretty close out there. And Stevie went home, one of our close allies. So we had to really try and repair that relationship. And Paige was also, her name at that point in time was
dragged to the mud by me and Robbie and a couple of others, because, and like Anita was like, oh, well, if they don't trust her, why should we trust her? And she sort of didn't really have anywhere to turn to. So me and Robbie are standing there with open arms, like, come on, Zach, come on, we're sorry.
You definitely did her dirty. I hope you've apologized since.
Yes, I'm unaware if I have, but we definitely did her dirty at that time. Yeah, and then she was just floating from then on in, really. Yep. And when it came down to me or her, I'm like, I choose her.
Yeah. Well, you know, around this time is also the time that you tell Shawnee about your job. So can you tell me, well, first of all, there were so many questions, Benji, about what your job is and the books and stuff like that. Can you explain it a little bit first before, because then it might make a bit more sense as to why you've told, why you decided to tell Shawnee.
Yeah, cool. How far back should we go?
Well, like, what is your job? Like, you know, you said you're a millionaire. Is this what is it? What if you had to summarize it in one couple of sentences? What would it be?
Yeah, easy. So right now I do e-commerce. So we help people create brands, like for physical products. If you want to sell like soup ladles, you want to sell microphones, or like tablecloths. I'm just looking at things around
me. I was going to say, you're looking at things around the room, right?
Headphones and laptop. If you want to create a brand, a private label, it's like put your own brand on it, get it sourced in wherever you want to source it. You can source in the US, source it in China, and you create your own brand. And we teach people to like innovate on that.
Right.
So if you're selling a soup ladle, you go through your competitors' reviews and you see that people want a big soup ladle. So you're like, cool, I'm going to manufacture my own big soup ladle that people want. You sell it on Shopify, Amazon, right, which Amazon's the second biggest company in the world now. They just cost $1 trillion. They do $236 billion of sales every single year. And it's not their products, you know. They sell your products for you to their customers. So basically, I do that. I have about 6 or 7 brands right now, and I have someone who runs that for me. And we're just growing those brands. And I also teach it. And you can find us on YouTube, Freedom Formula. It's me and my business partner, Evan. And we teach people how to do this for themselves and make passive income so they can travel the world, you know, spend more time with their family or whatever it is they want to do in life. It's like they don't have to work a 9-to-5 like most people do. We're trying to give people like that option, because I've been traveling the world for 8 years just living off like different streams of passive income. And the books, I had books ghostwritten because I'm a marketer. I really love marketing. And I got hired to do someone's book marketing for them about 4 years ago when I first, maybe 5 years ago, when I first moved to Brazil. And I did really good for them and made them a lot of money. And I was like, God, I should do this for myself, but I'm not a good writer. I'm like, you probably are, Nick. And so I hired people who are far better at writing than me, and then marketed their books on Amazon. And we had like great success and made like great money from that for about 12 months. And then I was teaching a course on how to do that. So I took the books down because I didn't really maintain them anymore. Right. But I haven't done it for about 5 years. But yeah, so now we're just teaching.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah, no, it's good. Definitely unique, but definitely wouldn't, because it just gives you freedom, which is what I want. I don't like people telling me what to do.
I was going to say, I can't really imagine you like putting on a shirt and tie and coming to my work and... Well, I guess I could see a teaching kids, actually. I think you'd be very, very good at teaching RKA kids. This is how we make money off soup ladles.
Oh, soup ladle. Everyone get your soup ladle. Sweatshop.
Yeah. So why did you think it was a good job to tell, a good idea to tell Shawnee about your income? And was it a good idea?
Yeah, I think it was a great idea. no, so Tegan comes back from Exile Island looking absolutely rabid. Like, she was out for blood. She'd been out there for 3 days. And I actually started feeling sorry for her, you know. And she came back, and like Anita had told her what had happened and everything. I'm like, okay, I have Robbie, I have Zach. I need Shawnee, because if with Shawnee comes Vanilla, we have 5 over 9 or 8. We got the numbers, like.
Yeah.
So as long as I got Shawnee's vote, and me and Shawnee had a pact. I mean, Shawnee's awesome. We had a alliance going from day 2, like, I'm like, I'll, because we're in the girls' camp and the boys' camp. It's like, I'll make sure your name stays off the chubby block and make sure mine stays off. We just check back in every now and then. One time, actually, she didn't believe me. I'm like, Shawnee, you're good. And she's like, whatever. She's giving me, like, so much sass. I'm like, Shawnee, trust me, you're good. But after that, like, we had a very open dialogue. And after this thing happened with Tegan, and Shawnee's like, did you lie to me? Sort of thing. I was like, cool, I need to repair this relationship because this gives me the numbers and the power. So I was like, Shawnee, I didn't lie to you, but I have told you one lie. And I just want to be completely, I want to sell myself to you. I'm like, I know my life is in your hands right now. And I was like, I'm actually not a graphic designer. I've actually have a successful business online. And she was like, okay. And she's like, sold. I'm like, sold as in,
she wants to buy a soup ladle.
She wants to buy a soup ladle. She's like, get me one of those soup ladles. I was like, sold, as in, she's like, yeah, you don't need to sell yourself, sold. I'm like, oh, okay, sweet. And from then on, like, we just had a very strong, transparent relationship where we watched each other's back and made sure each other was safe. And each other's name came up a lot, and we looked out for each other on that. And it was very good to be honest and genuine because, I mean, even though I played quite a manipulative game where I lied a lot, I didn't lie to, like, these people who I really needed. At least you need to start with something very genuine, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm sure you experienced that too. It's like, people aren't stupid. Like, you need to start from a very genuine base, and people really need to know who you are. And it's not just what you say, but it's like, what do you spend your time doing? What are you talking about with these people? And they need to understand you, or think they understand you, so they're not really scared of you. So being very transparent out there is helpful. And I mean, I said to Shawnee, like, I don't need to win this money. And if I get on the jury, I'm going to vote for you. And it's like, cool. Once again, align these incentives. She wants to take someone to the end who doesn't need the money, or someone who she can be like, this guy doesn't need money. And jury's like, yeah, he doesn't need the money. And like, that's, Shawnee doesn't want me to go home because I have a successful job. Shawnee wants me to stay and take me to final two because I have a successful job.
Right. So that all makes sense. So before we get to the swap, there was one thing that had a lot of people talking, and I think you know what it is. It's a little Mexican fiesta that you had, a one-person Mexican fiesta where you wolfed into the nachos. Did you think...
Speak my language, Nick. I love it.
Did you think that this would cause the uproar that it did? Because you were on, like, the radio, Gogglebox, or, like, did you think that this would cause that uproar when you were out there?
I knew it would be a good time for everyone. I didn't know it would
not for Heath.
Heath enjoyed himself. No, I didn't think it would. I mean, I didn't really see the uproar too. I'm not on social media that much. And I saw I was on Gogglebox, but like, I didn't really watch it that much. But I did hear it was big. And in all my interviews, everyone's like, what's up with the nachos? So apparently it was big. Oh, I was thinking that while I was doing it. Goddamn, these are delicious.
And it seemed like you were the only one who saw the previous season of Survivor before you went out there. Like, had you watched that? Like, did you watch seasons to prepare yourself? And did that just happen to be one of them? Or how did you know it was in there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I watch seasons, right? You're going to play Survivor. I want to watch Survivor. So as soon as I went down, that's why I wanted to go first, because I was like, God, I've got to get rid of that plate. And Tegan, once again, she's a very strong, very smart woman. She outfoxed me, got down there first, and I was just fortunate that she didn't find it. But yeah, as soon as I went down there, I mean, the nachos were pulling me in. I had to reach deep into them, and I was just like, sweet, I found the clue. It took me like probably eight. We had a 10-minute time slot, and I'd like to say that's probably the most efficient use of the 10 minutes. But I found the clue.
I don't think anyone would doubt that.
I found the clue within about 8 seconds, and I did not take in any of those words that it was written down there until about 8 minutes when the lady's like, you have like 2 minutes left. I'm like, oh God, I have to actually like try and memorize this thing because I was so transfixed by that food. It was 23 days without anything but rice and beans. So the last 2 minutes, I mean, I was still eating. I was pushing past that wall, but I had to memorize that clue or at least try and get like the general consensus of it, because actually what did cross my mind is like, dude, you can't read this clue and then go wander around the beach and not find the idol. Like, you need to know what this says.
Oh, I've been there. And did you consider getting rid of the plate at all, or did you think that the napkin underneath would be enough?
100% napkin was enough. I've heard that people are skeptical. It was enough.
Skeptical of what? Yeah. Like, it clearly worked, but did you think, oh crap, I need to get rid of this giant platter?
Well, I thought Tegan had found the clue, and Heath was coming after me, right? And I was like, cool. Tegan's going to be like, Heath, did you see the clue written on the plate? And Heath's going to be like, what plate? And it's like, okay, yeah, someone else
is
going to get the clue. When he's like, no, I didn't see it, but I did see the plate sort of thing, it's like, cool, plausible deniability. They don't know if someone else has found the clue.
Very good.
Very and good. Yeah, it was a massive pile of nachos left. I think a little TV magic makes it look like Robbie's just like staring at the beautiful view as the napkin's flickering in the wind. But no, I was pretty certain in that plan.
So then we get to the swap, and you bring Sean, Lydia, and Monica come over. Did you at that point ever have any plans of working? You said you were close with Shawnee and Fenella, but why did you have no plans to work with Fenella and Heath, and instead you threw your lot in with the Sean, Lydia, and Monica side?
Yeah, I was never close to Fenella. I was Fenella and I like basically never spoke out there. And since we're both from Melbourne, and Fenella's awesome, I'm like, damn, Fenella, why didn't we like at least speak? but all my interactions through Fenella went through Shawnee,
right?
Because they just voted together, and so I was never really close to Fenella. I didn't really have a relationship there, and Heath and I definitely burned our bridge way back.
Right.
You know, we voted out Tegan and she came back, and then we put all the votes on Heath, and he played his idol. And like, you know, Heath's very wary of what's going on. He's a very smart guy, And I mean, the other thing that was going through my mind is like, cool, if we gotta merge like seven to five, I'd prefer to go like 9-3 or like an 8-4. It's better to be small because you're less threatening. I wanted to go smaller, especially if I could forge some powerful relationships with someone like Sean, who has a lot of power in that game and is incredibly smart. I'm like, I'd love to sneak in and merge 9-3.
Yeah.
And then a champion's like, cool, there's only three of them. We've got four or five votes before we even have to worry and start getting out the champion. So it's like
definitely a tried and true strategy in Survivor.
Yeah. So that was my thought process. And once again, like my relationships weren't strong with Heath or Fenella, and they were with Sean and Monica.
Well, it works because you get rid of Tegan because you don't save her and you get rid of Heath. But one other thing that happens before merge is that you find the idol, and you find the idol at nighttime and you cross the ocean. Can you just quickly give us a little bit about that? Because in my experience, you're not allowed to search for the idol at nighttime. Production doesn't let you. But it seems like one of those things that if it's going to make good TV, they'll go for it. So can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah, so I was searching for idols at night since like day three. I was just, actually, side note, I remember lighting one of those torches, not one of the ones you take to tribal, but like one of those ones from the palm trees. You put it in the fire and it sort of stays lit for like 10 minutes and it drops these embers. And I remember going out with the cameraman looking for this idol. And like taking these backtracks through these woods in Fiji, like can barely see anything. And then that guy's got these night cameras, so he knows what's going on. And I'm dropping these embers behind me, and I think I'm heading straight down this beach, like within the trees though. And all of a sudden I start seeing like embers in front of me. And I was like, oh God, is someone else up looking for something? And the camera dude's like, nah, mate, we've been walking in circles. So like, oh Jesus, I don't even know where I am. So I like humbly went home, and I started looking for idols more around that dusk time, because it does get dark out there. But anyway, yeah, so the problem with this idol is the tide. Like the tide comes in during the day, out during the night at this time. And to go get this one during the day, you literally have to swim out to this island. And when you swim out to an island on Survivor, Nick, I'm sure you're well aware, it's like, he's looking for an idol. There's no plausible reason that I'm swimming out to an island apart from to look for an idol. So I'm not going during the day. That's just silly. It's going to put a huge target on my back. And we're going to have to play the idol at that tribal council. And then I'm adolescent and everyone knows that I'm like a, that I'm a snake. And so I went out at night post-feast. I was just full of energy, couldn't sleep. Moon was bright. And once again, I didn't know anyone else had seen this clue. So I remember just keep looking at that island. Like I kept my eye on that island. If anyone like Keith was going out to, going out there for any reason, I'd honestly just try and out-sprint him and get the idol before he did. But nighttime rolls around, the tide's all the way out, the moon's bright. I'm like, sweet, it's definitely time for an idol. And I said to myself, I'm not coming back to camp until the sun is up or I have an idol in my pocket, because I just like, you know, burn the boat sort of thing. Like, give yourself no second thoughts, because like, once again, you're probably well aware, it's like, you second guess yourself a lot out there. Like, what if someone sees me? What if this? What if this? I'm like, no, you just have no choice either. Find the idol, you're not going to sleep that night. So I went out there, found the idol, took about 40 minutes, a long time, and then came back in and had a happy sleep.
Very good. Well done. Well done on that one. So, Benji, here we are at the merge, and I want to just kind of know, like, what was your plan from there onwards? Did you want to ditch the contenders? Because it seems at this point that you do really ditch the contenders, other than Robbie. It seems like there is a bit of a, you know, you kind of leave Shawnee and Fanella out, and you are trying to kind of get in with the champions. Was that your plan at that point? And follow-up question, at that point, what was your ideal final three? Go.
Yeah, great question. So I'll give you just every one of my thoughts that I can remember coming into merge. Thought number one is, as long as I have Sean and my interests aligned, I will not go home. Because Sean is Matt's right-hand lady and very smart woman who I know. As long as I'm looking out for Sean, she's looking out for me, I'm safe. So that was the number one priority. Number two, I knew I had Robbie ahead of me at all times. And I would love to have Zach on board as well, but as we said, we lost him. We lost a good man earlier in the season. And then me and Shawnee were still obviously tight. Like, I mean, I don't know if it shows it, but me and Shawnee are still telling each other mostly everything and still looking out for each other. So I'm like, cool, I'm not going home. I have at least Robbie ahead of me if it swings to the boys. And I know I have Shawnee. So heading to final three at that stage, I'm not 100% who I wanted there. It wasn't Robbie. He's played an incredible game. I didn't want to sit next to that. And it was probably Shawnee. It was definitely Shawnee, actually. And probably Monica.
Right.
Because we also had the Secret Pawpaw Alliance, and we were quite close, especially come merge time.
So did you? No one know about your idol at all? Like, because you say like, oh, you know, we tell each other everything, but like you didn't tell your closest allies about your idol.
Yeah, I was in auditions for Survivor, and the lady, the Amelia who hosts it, is like, please, if you find an idol out there, don't tell anyone. So I'm like, cool, if I get on, I'm gonna do this woman proud and not tell anyone. So I went out there and I didn't tell anyone, because there's no benefit. Like, especially like when Robbie was getting voted out, and there's nothing I can do. I mean, you saw me run around the beach for an afternoon trying to save him, trying to get the numbers. And it comes down to it, and he's like, dude, you have an idol. Like, yeah, if I play the idol, I go home. So yeah. It would have just complicated things. It would have been good for Shawnee and Fanella to know about the idol on my elimination, because they might have been like, just play your idol.
Yeah, double-edged sword.
Double-edged sword, right. But up until that point, it was just good. It was just my secret.
So before we get – so I want to ask you about that when Robbie goes home. But before we get to that, it's the Lydia blind side. And that would have been a great feeling for you, I assume. But you weren't involved in it. It wasn't good for you, but at least it wasn't you. So not a great feeling, but also an okay feeling, I'm sure. So my favorite line of the season, Benji, is when after Lydia gets voted out and Robbie says
– another one.
Something along the lines of like, well, who was the third vote?
Yeah.
What, did you ever feel that you like had to do a lot of the strategic heavy lifting for Robbie, or was it kind of like a shared thing?
Definitely a shared thing. Robbie's very intelligent.
I mean, the edit can take can make anyone look a little bit silly out there.
As I know.
But yeah. Yeah. Well, apparently. Yeah, no, Robbie, very smart. We always had our shooting star talks at nighttime, and we both bounced ideas off each other, and we sort of sharpened each other's swords. And
crossed swords, man.
We crossed swords by night. And no, Robbie's a great guy. And also, like, stuff like that with that Lydia vote. You know, Robbie and I, we had the bumpiest ride into Merge probably possible out of there, and more than anyone else out there. Maybe Shawnee as well. But like, we always looked at each other because we had these grand plans. Things are going to be easy. Cool. We keep Stevie. We get rid of Tegan. We sail into Merge, four bros strong. Like, and every time it didn't go our way, we always look at each other like, cool, man. It'd be boring if it was easy, right? And you know, like, we were just very optimistic. So Lydia goes home. It's like, cool. Guess what? We're on the bottom, but it'd be boring if it was easy, right? And, you know, it just fired us off. Like, we're both very competitive. We're both like challenges. And, we're like, cool. The next challenge is get off the bottom.
Well, one thing that this is probably, you know, look, who am I to say what you did right or wrong? But I think this is the one thing that I need clarification on about why it didn't work out, because it seems at this point when Robbie goes home that with your idol, you can actually make this work if you get you, Robbie, Shawnee, and Fenella get back on board and they split the votes. You can get it out. You can work this out that if you play the idol on Robbie, that you will win the day in that vote. Did you think about that in that moment, or am I reading that completely wrong?
No, you're 100% right. And it's a great question. Because I mean, I asked myself that whole afternoon as I'm running around trying to rally the numbers. The problem that I ran into is Robbie was playing an amazing game. He was a big physical threat. And I want Robbie to stay around for that reason, but Fenella doesn't. Fenella would love to see Robbie go home, and so would Shawnee. And well, so would Sam.
Is he playing an amazing game then if that his ally, well, supposedly his allies wanted him to go home?
An amazing game in the sense that he's a big threat. If he makes it to the end, he's going to do really well. So it's like Fenella and Shawnee looked at me like, dude, we have an opportunity to get rid of Robbie. It's like this is amazing. And I'm like, yeah, but can we do it later? And they're like, nah, it would cause too much stress and cause too many waves. And then all of a sudden, all three of us are on the bottom, or four of us are on the bottom as like a tight contender alliance sort of thing. I mean, I was 100% down if that plan was going to go down, but I could not get the numbers to help me.
And how would you have sold that without telling them about the idol, which is something you didn't want to do? So I understand, but I was wondering how that kind of convo fit into all of it. Benji, the next episode is probably one of the greatest episodes of Survivor, mainly in part because of, well, mostly I would say because of you and, you know, a little bit of what Sean was doing was amazing as well because it was so, so fun. But tell me, this is the biggest episode. What, before we get to the tribal council and when you spook Sean and all that, if you had to boil down what was the one key in getting the Mighty Ducks together? What was the one key in bringing over Brian and Monica? Was it losing Robbie that made them more willing to work with you? Was there something that you said to Brian and Monica? What was it that the one thing?
Yes. I mean, the one thing would just be like incentives being aligned, and everyone was basically, I mean, to go back a little bit, like, so Lydia went home, Robbie went home, and then Sam also went home.
Sorry, Sam, I forgot the Sam.
Yeah. So Sam went home the day before that, and they have, so they, the core alliance who was calling the shots was Matt, Steve, Sean, Shane, and they're the top four. And then you've got Brian and Monica knowing like, cool, we're next. And me and Shanella both knowing, cool, we're also next. It's like whoever they choose to be next is going to be next. And after that vote, we can no longer flip it. It's at 9 and we've got 5 and they've got 4.
Yeah.
It's like if you wait one more vote and one of them goes home, say Brian goes home, who that's where they put the vote, we're now 4-4. And we can no longer flip that. And there's no getting into that core four alliance that these champions had. So it's like, this is the only chance that we have to do this. And I mean, I was pushing hard for it. And it didn't take much convincing because they were also pushing for it because it's like, this is our last chance.
Right. Aligned interests. I like it. So, So before we get to what you actually say to spook Shan into playing her idol for herself, can you just kind of explain that, which links to Final Tribal Council? Did Shan know beforehand, not that she was going to save him, but did Shan know beforehand that Matt was going to go home? And if so, how did she know?
Dear Shan, if you are listening, I love you. Yes, she did. You did know, Shan.
She's admitted that she did know. She had heard. She hasn't lied. She's said that she knew he was going home or he was getting votes or something like that.
Good news.
Well, she said that on the reunion. She said that it was just too late before she could do anything. So I don't think that's a lie, but how did she know? Did you tell her?
So I told her that the swing was in effect because, once again, we had 100% open communication. That was the key to having such a genuine relationship for someone very powerful looking out for me. It's like, cool, if you want to jump ship with us, I'll look after you like you've looked after me. And so I gave her that heads up. Monica also gave her that heads up. So going to the tribal, she was well aware that Matt was going home, as exemplified by her playing an idol for him.
So this is the bit where you guys kind of got into this at the reunion, and this was like seeing your parents fight. I was like, no, guys, don't. I love you both. What are you doing? So what was you say that you knew she was going to play it on Matt, but she claims that she came to that decision in tribal council. And I'm inclined to believe that she came up with that decision in tribal council. So how do you rebut that and say that you knew she was going to do that?
All right, here we go. Shan is an incredibly intelligent woman, and her best move is to play it for Matt. Like running the situation in my head, the scenario in your head, like it's on that episode too. I'm like, the only thing that could go wrong tonight is Shan plays this for Matt. And with that going wrong, Shan maintains the power. Shan probably still looks after me because she's backstabbed me crossed me using my information. I told her I was going to Matt. She plays it for Matt. So I don't know. She comes back to camp, the most powerful woman in camp. And that's a great move for Shan. And I know Shan is a very intelligent woman, and she will always play the best move for her. So like walking in that tribal council, I'm confident that Shan's going to play that for Matt because she's very smart, you know?
Like definitely. I understand that 100%. The only issue is that the way it was presented at the reunion, it seemed like you were like, no, I knew that you were going to do that because you told me, whereas you're here now saying that it's like, no, I knew because it was the right move, which I agree with you 100%. A good survivor player should be going, well, what's the player's best move, which makes it – that's why it's really hard when you play with people who don't know what their best move is. So I totally understand that. But do you see how there's a difference?
Totally. During tribal council, Shan said, Jonathan asked her a question. She goes, and that's why I'm going to play an idol for myself tonight, Jonathan, twice or maybe three times.
Right. And you knew she was bluffing.
Yeah. And I had it in my head that she's probably going to play for Matt already.
Okay.
And like, you don't, that's not what you do in tribal council. That's not how you talk to Jonathan. I'm going to play an idol for myself. It's like, yeah, most of the time it's played for yourself. It's like, I'm going to play my idol tonight, something.
Yeah.
So I'm like, cool. This is about to happen. It's about to go down. So I was well prepared when it did.
So let's talk about what you actually said. Like Benji, I have to say, and I will say that was, I would probably say it's the best move of all three seasons in Australian Survivor. I don't know, I can't speak highly enough of it because it was so new, and I don't know why people haven't thought about really doing this before. I know we've had Malcolm who's kind of done it, and Wendell did it to, I think it was Wendell, did it to some degree, or Dominic, but I just thought it was absolutely fantastic. How did you feel when you were doing it? Did you think, this is going to work? Or were you like, there's no way she's going to believe
it? I was probably like, there's a 50% chance this works, and there's a 50% chance it doesn't, and Shan ends up going home anyway. So, I mean, I was like, it's ride or die tonight. It's a big night no matter what, and it just happened to go the best way possible in a sense. But also, I mean, it was, like you said, it was a great move. but it was also my worst move. I mean, that got me voted out the next tribal council. Like, I made a lot of moves in that game that didn't get me voted out and gave me a lot of power. This one's definitely the flashiest move, but strategically speaking, it was my worst move.
Okay, cool. So obviously, yes, it's flashy and it looks amazing, but you're saying now it's your worst move, which I really appreciate that. What would you do differently then?
Nothing, bro.
We don't play with regrets. I know you don't. Yeah. We've spoken already. I don't play with regrets, all that, blah, blah, blah. But now, with hindsight, tell me if, say, another player is in that exact situation, if you don't want to remove it from you, what could they do differently to win that game, win that round, and also stay late further on?
Yeah, well, that's a great question because, I mean, I was at this crossroad day 37, I think it was, where I'd earned Matt's trust, Sean's trust, Steve and Shane were, I did not speak to them much at all, but, you know, they were part of that. And they needed those numbers. And there's so much pressure on this big flip and everyone's incentives are aligned and ready to flip. And everyone's going for Matty and, you know, they don't know if Matt's going to play his idol or whatever. But I just earned the trust of the most powerful person in the game.
Yep.
And I have Sean's trust as well. And they have two really strong allies. And I've been informing Sean that the flip's going to happen. And I can stick with Matt. Like, Matt thought I was going to be writing Brian's name down that night. And if I wrote down Brian's name, then we have three people below me in that pecking order. And I'm sailing into top five and probably more than that, because I know Sean would probably want to make a couple of moves before getting to the end. I mean, that's the boring way to the end.
The boring way would have been to pile on with them to get rid of Brian. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Buys you another couple of rounds where something else can then open up.
Buys me two rounds. I still got an idol in my pocket no one knows about. I know mine and Sean relationship strong.
Yeah.
And we can sort of make some magic happen from there.
It's the boring way.
That's the smart, boring way. But once again, you know, I went out to have fun. I went out to play big. And so I would do the exact same thing again. I would just play my idol the next round and save Shawnee's advantage for the round after that. I mean, that's 20-20 hindsight.
Yeah. So you say at the reunion that it wouldn't have mattered because regardless, you would have played the idol for Brian. Is that true, Benji? Would you have actually given up your idol for Brian? Because, I don't know, would you have done that?
Yeah, is that unbelievable?
It's not unbelievable. No, it's not unbelievable. Yeah, yeah. But I don't know. You just didn't seem closely aligned to Brian to kind of give him – yes, it would have maybe brought him closer to you, but it didn't seem like a slam dunk that you would have done that. Were you tossing that up or were you like, oh, please don't make me get to that decision?
Because I mean, another big move. You know, I was out there to make those big moves. And I'm like, cool. Sure. If Matt's not going home, either Steve or Sean's going home.
Yeah.
So, you know, if Matt had played his idol for himself and Sean had played it for herself and I played for Brian, we're at least taking down that core four alliance that was going to sail to the end. Otherwise, that's the last tribal we can do it. Right. So I was very much being like, cool. If Brian goes home and I had flipped, and I go home in the bottom three, destroying my relationship with Matt, which I worked so hard to build, and destroying my relationship with Sean, who knew I was flipping, but, you know, I've still flipped on her. That's a tough spot to be in compared to if someone like, say, Steve goes home, and then we've got Sean, Matt, and Shane on the bottom, and I'm in the power seat of the Mighty Ducks.
When did you find out that Matt actually went home with an idol in his pocket?
Later that night, Steve let it slip on the beach. Right.
Okay, yeah, so you must have been super happy with yourself then.
I was definitely happy with it. But at the same time, as I don't know, is Steve telling the truth? Like, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know, because I was also spreading the rumor that Steve had an idol because I was trying to pin some votes on him. So I was like, this is Steve's way of sort of throwing the heat off him and being like, yeah, the idol went home with Matt sort of thing.
That's funny. Well done, mate, because it was such a good episode. It was bloody brilliant, bloody brilliant. So we now get to your boot episode. Unfortunately, we have to talk about it.
Let's do it.
Now, in this episode, you guys have to split and pick people to play in the reward challenge. And when I spoke to Fenella, she says that not choosing Brian lost you the game. Do you believe this?
I don't know if it lost me the game. It definitely
didn't.
So, you know.
which inadvertently loses you the game. So do you think that's true? Do you think he really was that annoyed by that?
I think it was definitely a big factor. My side of the story is like,
of course, tell us.
I know I have this advantage with Shawnee. We have the advantage, and I know I have an idol. And my next two targets were Sean and Brian. So I'm like, cool. I don't need to make up with Sean. I don't need a relationship with Brian. I'm trying to work like too far in the future. I'm trying to work on Steve, and I'm talking about that fried chicken that Jonathan's telling us, and me and Steve are like, oh, yum, fried chicken, delicious. And we're like growing out back at the back row of that on that mat while we're standing in the water. And it's like, you know, sweet, I'm a win with Steve. I'm going to bring him closer because he's about to lose Sean, which leaves him with just Shane. And like, he's going to need another someone out here. I'm like, I'll be your bro. And that's what I was thinking. And I also knew that Shane and Brian hated each other. So I'm like, there's a chance, a strong chance that Shane does not pick Brian, but she was smart enough to do that.
Right. Right. Well, that's interesting. Interesting. Probably, yeah, like you said, probably trying to go too far in the future than
for sure.
Yeah, but for you know, sure. You got to. So one other thing that happened with you and Brian in this episode is that he has the necklace on, and at the well, you say that she's running around trying to get you, but he actually not only is immune, but he's wearing the necklace. Was that as big as big of a faux pas as the show presented it, or not?
No, I mean, I do hate this question because this is like a lot of TV magic goes into Survivor, but this is like sort of when it becomes your undoing and it didn't happen. You're like, God damn it, man. Like, this is what everyone's asking. It's like, why'd you tell Brian that? It's like, I don't think
he even twigged, but like, were you actually trying to make it seem like she was going for him, but you just forgot he was wearing the idol?
No, I didn't say that at all. So what I said to Brian was like, dude, I'm the villain at the moment. Sean's coming after me. If I go home, you know who she's coming after next. It's you. I'm trying to win his vote for that tribal council, being like, dude, you want me out here. If Sean goes home, we're good. If I go home, you're next on the chopping block.
Yeah.
And that was the conversation at the well. And it made me look like a big old silly goose by chopping some stuff together. I'm like, dog, damn it.
Look, you're about to go home with an idol. I think they were just trying to like do the lay the foreplay maybe. So Shawnee's advantage, I absolutely loved what you did with this, which is kind of like where it has power, but you were giving it a little bit of extra power so that people would come on board with you. It seemed like the problem with that, though, was that Jonathan then verified it at Tribal Council that it doesn't have the power of giving two or three votes. It just has the power of stealing one. So do you think it was that moment that sealed the deal that Brian and Monica flipped back, or was it already a done deal going into Tribal?
It was a done deal going into Tribal for sure. We knew we didn't have their votes, and the girls were much more perceptive of that than we were. But I still thought I was safe. I was like, the only way I go home is because I knew that Brian had found the idol at that challenge. So I'm like, the only way that I go home is if Brian plays his idol for Sean. And then I go home and without playing my idol. So like, I was like, we're good because to give you some more context on this, this is my big mistake. Like, I made a couple of mistakes out there. Made a few mistakes out of that, probably a lot. But this was like the critical one that I made. Get back from the challenge. I know it's basically going to be five champs against three contenders. Like, it's very clear. And I say to Shawnee and Fenella, I don't tell them about the idol, but they're like, cool, we have this vote advantage. I'm like, oh, awesome. Like, we're good because we're going to play this vote advantage tight 4-4. We're going to re-vote tight. We're going to go to rocks. And I know that the numbers are coming to me, so I don't have to draw a rock. So I'm like, cool, I'm safe tonight. I just have to convince Shawnee and Fenella to go to rocks for me. So, like, you know, I was trying to convince these two girls to put their life on the line for me. And that's where my focus was. And I never thought, and this was the mistake, I'm like, we can't tie this in the second round if the vote advantage doesn't apply. In my head, it's like, tie, rocks. Let's make sure that people are going to go to rocks for me.
Right.
That's the big mistake. It's like, it's not tie. It's like tie,
lose and go home with a nail in your pocket. And I didn't see that.
Okay. That's very interesting. So, Benji, you get voted out, and how long did it take you to realize that you had beaten Annalise by one day?
It took me probably 10, 15 minutes. You know, I smashed down a couple of chocolate bars, got weighed in, got in the car, and I was like, hang on a second. going out there, I knew she made it 38 days, which is impressive. Were you 38 days as well, Nick?
No, it's funny. I was 37, and then she on the podcast was hanging crap on me for beating me by one day. So now you get to return the favor by beating her by one day.
If she ever bullies you, you give me a call and I'll step right on it.
Good.
That's hilarious. I was well aware she was 38 days. And once we got to that 38 day mark, I felt very happy that I had the same experience as her out there.
So you go to Jury Villa. Can you just we don't need to get into the minutiae of, you know, life at Jury Villa. We've seen the videos, but can you describe the vibe? What were people thinking about the people that were still left in the game? What was just the general vibe about who was going to win, etc.?
Yeah, so Jury Villa was amazing. I left the game and joined the frat house, and it was Matt Rogers, who's just a top bloke, Sam, who's hilarious, and Robbie, who's just an incredible guy. And we just broed out. We had I think we had 4 days before anyone else joined us, and we just went to waterfalls and just hung out and ate and got fat. So I love that portion of Jury Villa. But you know, we knew that Sean was probably the biggest game player left, and if she made it to the final two, I guess it's kind of cool because it's the first time I can actually speak freely about what happens. All the other interviews are if she makes final two.
Yeah, good.
I thought that if Sean made final two, that it would be, you know, 9 votes landslide. And I think up until almost the final tribal council, a lot of people felt very similar.
So could you spend a lot of time with Matt Rogers. Clearly, he was the deciding vote in the end, it seems, both he and Monica. What could you sense that there was that angriness maybe building, or that bitterness or something building against Sean already? Or was that something that was completely born out of final tribal? Because surely that came beforehand.
Yeah, I don't think Matt's bitter at all.
Not bitter. That's not the right word. That's not the right word. It's just.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
I gotcha. I can give you the reasons why I think he voted for Shane, and I do agree with him in the sense that he was close to both Shane and Sean, and they were very loyal to him, and they're very close to him. You know, they were his friends out there, and they both made it to the end, but one of them made a mistake that cost him his game, and one of them didn't.
Right.
And I mean, why would you give it to the one that cost you your game and made that mistake when there's someone who's equally your friend there, who's loyal to you the whole way, is sitting there and he thinks she deserves the $1 million.
That all makes sense. But devil's advocate would then come in and say that, well, Shane wasn't with him at the beginning and she kind of was kind of against that side while Sean wasn't. And the other side would say that Sean played a more dominant game. So that's kind of, you know, look, he can vote however he wants. I'm a big proponent of people can do whatever the hell they want with their vote. And hopefully I get a chance to chat to Matt at some point. But it did seem that there was other reasons that kind of came into it, but which I understand. Sorry, keep going.
Matt's game was one based on loyalty. You know, I think that's the type of game that he does respect out there. Mm-hmm. I'm very different. I like the big moves. And people playing a big game and make it to the end, because that's just incredible. But I do think, match criteria based, you know, everyone bases their criteria based on how they would play. I'm pretty convinced. And he went out there and played a very loyal, honorable sort of game. And I guess that's why he voted that way.
Right. So who did you want to win at that point?
I wanted Sean to win.
Sean?
I love Sean, and she played such a great strategic game.
Even more than Shawnee?
Oh, where are we final four?
At the moment that you went out.
The moment I went out. Sean, I think, was going to be my number one pick.
Yeah, I'd say Sean and then probably Shawnee second, yeah.
So going into final tribal council, and you knew that it was Shane and Sean, it seems like you wanted her to win. You said that you were locked in. Were you ever persuaded or were you ever kind of like thinking about voting for Shane at all?
I wasn't. I definitely wasn't.
So you were locked in.
And I think locked in, going into that final tribal, it's like, cool, the final tribal is like, how well can you talk about your game? And it's like, yeah, I've watched your game. I was there. I know what happened for a lot of it, and I don't really need to be like sold your game. I would have liked to see Sean own a couple of things that she did with more confidence, because it does, in a sense, discredit a big move if you don't really like admit to it, or yeah, don't really like open up to it. It's like, well, did you know that this was such a good move at the time? If you're not really like, this was a good move at the time. So I do get where Sean undersold herself in a couple of occasions, but I mean, she just played such a great game out there. Like, I was not going to be persuaded.
What was your view of Shane's game?
Shane played an incredible winner's game, in the sense that come merge time, you're making a final two, Shane. No one wants Shane to go home. She's not a physical threat. She's not a social threat. She's not a strategic threat. Everyone wanted to be sitting next to Shane at the end. And like, everyone knew that Shane was always going to make final two.
So by that logic, would you say that Sean lost the game rather than Shane winning it?
Yes.
Right. That's a hard pill for Sean to swallow, I got to say.
Yeah. Yeah, but once again, you know, it makes no difference on Sean's life. She played an incredible game, as did a lot of people. It doesn't really matter where you come, eh?
Would you have voted for Brian if it was a Brian-Sean final two? And do you – or sorry, well, yeah, yes or no? Would you have voted for Brian? No?
No. The question I would have for Sean would be, why is Brian sitting next to you? Like, I would have lost a little bit of respect for her taking Brian to the end when – what I thought would have been a much easier person to take to the end would have been Shane. So that would have been my only real, like, what's going on there? Like, but I would not have voted for Brian over Sean.
See, that's interesting, because it seems like other people would have lost respect for her, but for the inverse, that like, it was easier to beat Brian, whereas you're saying that like, you would have lost respect because it would have been harder to beat Brian, but she, in the end, she'd lose respect either way.
Totally. Totally. Yeah, I feel like people are always just going to have like favorites and then like reverse rationalize why they're favorite or not their favorite, you know?
Yeah. And so do you think that if it was Brian and Sean, if Sean had taken Brian, do you think that it would have been a 7-2 vote with only Shawnee and Fenella voting for Brian?
Monica was very close to Brian, and I mean, she gave her vote to Shane. So I think Moni, if the tribal went the same way, would have voted Brian.
But we have Sean as the winner.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, right.
Probably. I don't know where Matt puts his vote in that situation. Probably Sean.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, it is an interesting one, isn't it?
It's definitely a very interesting tribal council to kind of dissect, and especially when you put it in relation to the other tribal councils that we've had in Australian Survivor. I feel like it's a kind of interesting counterpoint, and definitely it reinforces why you need to kind of own your game. So, yeah, very interesting. Mm-hmm. Benji, that takes us to the end of your journey, but we've got a few questions if you wouldn't mind indulging the listeners.
Let's do it.
All right, ready? Okay, let's do this. Saffron asks on Twitter, what have you learned the most about yourself during the process of playing and then watching yourself back on the telly?
God damn, Saffron, that's a heavy question.
Yeah, mate, we don't muck around here.
I don't muck around on Twitter. I'll give you something that I've learned. I don't know if it's the biggest lesson. I've learned so much. I think I'm sure you can relate to this one, Nick, and it's a little bit cliche, but just like, what's important in life when you take away everything? When you don't have technology, you don't have family, you don't have friends, you don't have business, you don't have exercise or whatever. It's like, when you take everything away from you, what do you actually miss? And for me, I miss my family the most. And it's like, everybody knows it, but once you're out there for 40 days or 50 days and you don't get to talk to your family. You realize like it's like such a opportunity that I'm so appreciative of. It's like, cool, I actually know what it feels like to have everything stripped away. And I know that these times, like right now, I'm here in Hawaii on a family holiday, which has been incredible, spending time with my family. It's like, this is the most important thing in my life. And the opposite to that would be social media. You know, you go 40 days without social media, you jump back on, all excited to catch up on everything that happened, and you realize that nothing happened. Like, social media is so...
the worst.
Like, transient. And, like, yeah, it's like the worst. People you wouldn't hang out with in real life, you're letting consume your mind online for 3, 4, 5 hours a day. So it's like, cool, and now I'm not doing that anymore. Yeah. And it's been really good just in like realigning what is important to me in life.
Excellent. Okay, well, we'll go for a more light-hearted question.
Oh, yeah, sweet. I thought we were going to go deeper and deeper.
Yeah. Eric Williams asks, has Taco Bell called to offer an endorsement deal?
Taco Bell? Unfortunately, not yet, but slide into the DMs if you want one, Taco Bell. I am a big nacho fan. I love guacamole. And they didn't actually have guacamole in those nachos.
So I heard. Terrible.
Imagine how hard I would have gone if they had that guac in there.
Felipe Chamon said, beard. Felipe Chamon talks about, you know, he asked a big question about, you know, Malcolm being the person who asked people to change up the idol play, kind of like what you did. And it seems like an obvious move, but basically, is Benji a game changer now? Would you consider yourself the Australian version of a game changer?
Yeah, I think anytime someone in Australia plays an idol now, you know, that's going to cross people's mind, and it wasn't going to cross it before. So class me as a game changer.
Sounds good. Jessica Frey says, who would stab each other in the back first in a blood versus water between you and Annalise?
Annalise would try. She'd definitely try first, but I'd see it coming, grab the knife, throw it back at her here in the face. She'd go down day 38. I'd sail on and win.
A knife in the face, no less. In the face.
Yeah, I don't stab in the back. I just go straight for the face.
Get it with one of those soup ladles in the
face. the blunt force trauma.
Patrick Chormy says, have you considered always wearing a black eye? I feel you wear it well and it suits your persona.
Thank you, Patrick. Yeah, I really wanted to look like Scar from The Lion King. And, you know, I sort of pulled that off. It was funny because Fenella kicked me in the face one night, and then the night after I went for the other eye with the stick. And then I had a bug fly in my eye and had to get antibiotic stuff put in that as well. So yeah, my eyes didn't love the experience.
Two more questions. Jason says, how did you feel about the fan reaction to you? People often criticizing your accent or accusing you of lying to the audience about your game or your finances. Did you find this unfair at all?
No, not at all. I was super appreciative that anyone who watches Survivor, and you know, I didn't hang out with the negative people. I mean, everyone's got negativity on there. And if someone like Shawnee's getting people being negative to her, I can see why the cocky young upstart is getting negative feedback on him. So like, yeah, I mean, it's what happens when you put yourself on TV, and I just appreciate that people watch. I mean, they're entitled to their own opinion.
Well, last question is from Fiona Jennings. She asks, Benji, would you come back to play again?
It's a tough question, isn't it, Nick, man?
It definitely is. That's why I ask it, because I hated being asked it myself.
It's so tough because it's like I've just finished and I'm like, wow, what a wild ride. That's awesome. And like we were talking about earlier, now it's time for some certainty. Now it's time for something secure, mm-hmm. Someone to hold me close. And I think I would play in the future. You know, once you do get that certainty, once you go back to doing some cool stuff in real life, and this has not just happened, it's not such a big experience in your life, then you're like, cool, send me out there again. The one caveat is it's got to be bigger and better. Like everything in my life is just like, I just want to go bigger. I want to do better. I want to just do cool stuff. And I don't want to go out for like an ordinary season. So yeah, put yourself out there, Nick. Put some cool people, big game players out there, and we'll have a lot of fun. So I'd go back out for that.
Cool people versus game players? Is this the same?
Cool
people first gamblers. Well, what camp would we be in?
I definitely would not fit in the cool people tribe. I think that's obvious.
I put you in both.
Okay, well, Benji, thank you so much for stopping by. This was absolutely awesome. It was so good to chat through your season and just kind of hear all about the ins and outs. And I feel like we are all, I'm just going to say, collective thank you for being out there and making this season is what it was. It was an absolute ripper.
Thanks so much, man. Thanks for doing the podcast. I love the podcast. It's an honor to be on here. And yeah, thanks to everyone who watched and everyone who's listening. And yeah, I appreciate you guys.
Where can people catch up with you? I know we've just talked about the ills of social media, but if you want, you can plug your social media handle here. If not, people can just kind of catch you next time you're on the Cool People Tribe.
On the Cool People Tribe. Yeah, you can catch me on there on the gram, Benji.Bloop. Or you can catch me on YouTube at Freedom Formula. I'm going to have some sweet new content coming out this month.
Excellent. Cool. All right, Benji.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for stopping by, and we will chat to you soon.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate it.